Hello and welcome to Radio Prague. I'm Dita Sidhu and we start the program with a brief news bulletin. Should the ruling coalition break up, Czech President Václav Klaus would want the parties of a new government to guarantee that they'll have majority seats in parliament, Mr. Klaus told Czech radio on Thursday. The Czech president reacted to speculation that the main party in the fragile coalition, the Social Democrats, plans to form a minority government with the thwart of the communists in parliament. But to Prime Minister Stanislav Gross, the president's remark is just one of many others made by people who hope to influence decision-making at this weekend's Social Democratic Party's nationwide congress, at which the party's future role in government is discussed and a new leadership is elected. Some 80 university professors and Academy of Science workers have signed a letter calling on to Prime Minister Stanislav Gross to resign. The petition was forwarded to his assistant on Thursday. The group of academics say they want Mr. Gross to step down because recent events show that he lacks the qualities needed to lead the country as a competent prime minister. Mr. Gross has been criticized for failing to explain how he could afford a Prague flat in 1999. His wife, Sharka, was also involved in dubious business transactions. In the letter, the signatories write the economic activities of Mr. Gross's family are a sad example of a lack of personal morale and are having a devastating effect on the social climate. A young healthcare worker at a retirement home close to the southern town of Jihlava has been killed by a pensioner. The 22-year-old social worker was stabbed by the 55-year-old man who was living in the home. He died from his injuries soon after he was rushed to hospital. Police say the pensioner was under the influence of alcohol and psychologists are determining the motive behind the stabbing. The Czech Academy of Sciences has a new chairman. The 62-year-old head of the Institute for Molecular Genetics, Václav Bacses, was elected to head the country's most senior scientific research institute on Thursday. The scientist will be replacing the 67-year-old biologist and academic Helena Ilnerová, who was the first woman to chair the academy. Mrs. Ilnerová, who chose not to stay on for another term, intends to spend more time with her family and do more laboratory work. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The next few days should stay warm, but with overcast skies and occasional rain. Daytime temperatures will continue to reach highs of 17 degrees Celsius. Meteorologists expect temperatures to drop on Easter Sunday and Easter Monday to range between 10 and 14 degrees Celsius and forecast rain throughout the country. I'm Dita Sidhu, and that's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, and my name is Peter Smith. Coming up in today's programme, how is the Czech Prime Minister, Stanislav Gross, faring at the EU summit in Brussels? Also, there's a travelling vision on life in the Maldives 3 months after the tsunami.
It was very sad. A child was telling me that we thought it was the end of the world.
And in part two of our special Czechs today, Jan Wellinger continues the remarkable story of the Siptak family after their daring escape from communist Czechoslovakia. All this and more, so don't go away. Wednesday saw the conclusion of a European Union summit in Brussels, focused on the Lisbon agenda, which is aimed at making Europe's economy more competitive. The main issues on the table were the liberalisation of services and changes to the Stability Pact. Radio Prague's Martin Mikulaj was in Brussels with the Czech delegation.
One of the most discussed issues was the so-called Bolkestein Directive regarding the free movement of services. It initially planned full liberalisation of services, but countries like Germany and France were afraid of the influx of cheap services from the new EU countries and refused the original version of the reform. But the Czech Republic was, on the contrary, in favor of the liberalization. As the Prime Minister Stanislav Gross says, he hopes that not only services, but also movement of labor will be fully free in the future.
For us, it's important that the free zone in Europe will not only include the free movement of capital and goods, but also the free movement of services and workers. This is our position. That was our position when we joined the EU, and that's the kind of EU we want in the future.
A to je náš přístup, protože s tímto do Evropské unie jsme vstupovali a takovou Evropskou unii v budoucnu chceme.
Mr. Gross says other European Union countries share his views.
Například vláda Velké Británie je velmi výrazně nakloněna tomu, aby došlo k liberalizaci.
Great Britain's government, for instance, is also very much in favor of liberalization in this field. Britain didn't introduce a transition period for the free movement of labor, and its experience has been positive. We were told at yesterday's dinner that the UK doesn't regret this step and that not having a transition period hasn't caused them any problems.
But economic issues were not the only thing on the agenda at this EU summit. Czech Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda told me that he and his colleagues had discussed the Union's foreign policy, such as the postponement of accession talks with Croatia.
The decision of the European Council is that Croatia is welcome to start the negotiations, but there is one precondition, the full cooperation with the International Criminal Court for former Yugoslavia. We decided today to set up task force. Javier Solana, European Commission, Austria and United Kingdom, just to make an assessment for the European Council or for GAERC to be better informed before taking a so-called final decision.
Mr. Svoboda said another issue discussed in Brussels was Kofi Annan's proposal to radically overhaul the United Nations, adding that his main concern was that the United Nations Security Council should be more effective.
Martin Mikulay there with that report. It's now close to 3 months since news of the tsunami disasters shocked the world. With the help of charities and NGOs, the people of Southeast Asia are slowly rebuilding their lives and coming to terms with their grief. UNICEF, which was providing around-the-clock assistance within hours of the tragedy, has now decided to show the world what the past 3 months have been like in the Maldives. Daniela Lazarabar has that story.
The travelling exhibition of documentary photographs and children's drawings called The Maldives After the Big Wave, which was launched in Prague this week, is UNICEF's way of thanking donors around the world for their generosity and letting them see how their money is being spent. Pavla Gomba heads the Czech branch of UNICEF.
The first priority was the survival of children, meaning clean water, nutrition, emergency healthcare, vaccination. I think that some 2 weeks after the disaster, we started registering the orphans. We are setting up special centers for these children. But of course, the priority is to find a family for them, either their own family, extended family, aunts, grandparents, whoever has survived, or a foster care.
The photographs are divided into several sections. The time of grief, depicting the hours and days immediately after the disaster, the aid operation, and finally the recovery, children going back to school and playing with friends again. All the documentary photographs were taken by Italian photographer Giacomo Pirozzi.
We've been working for UNICEF for 15 years now, and I've been covering lots of tragedies from the genocide in Rwanda. I've been to Beslan when the school was taken. And it's always very difficult to draw the right line. You know, in a way, you feel like you're exploiting human suffering. But I think UNICEF is quite good at that. I mean, from one side, you do have to show that people are suffering. Otherwise, there's no impact in the images. But at the same time, we always try to promote the positive side.
Will you able to communicate with the children while you photographed, and what impression did you get?
Sadness always. You know, this little girl, for instance, she lost her twin sister, and she was it was very sad. A child was telling me that we thought it was the end of the world. This is the kind of moments that really you feel it. I mean, even if I've been doing this for 15 years, anytime you find yourself in one of these situations, it's quite hard, but you have to carry on because that's my job.
While the material damage is being repaired fairly quickly, the psychological damage will take years to mend. Tom Bergman-Harris is head of UNICEF in the Maldives.
There were no psychologists in the Maldives before the disaster, and so we got together with Save the Children and Red Cross, who helped us train teachers in the islands to recognize trauma, to recognize psychosocial problems, and they were basically given crash courses. This is a long-term element, a long-term activity that cannot be resolved quickly because every single Maldivian has been affected, and some show signs very quickly and others hide the problems that they have with this disaster.
As I said, part of the exhibition is made up of children's drawings. Psychologists are getting them to portray the disaster in order to help them to come to terms with it. The pictures show dead people floating in the sea, people running in fear or clinging to palm trees, destroyed houses, upended boats and helicopters flying overhead. The tsunami seen through the eyes of children is a powerful account of the disaster.
Daniela Lazarova there, and if you'd like to see the exhibition here in Prague, it's open at the Toscansky Palace on Hradčany Square until the 4th of April. Now, being Thursday, that means it's time for our new weekly bite-sized roundup of all the latest business news in the Czech Republic, and here's Brian Kennedy.
It's been an eventful week for the Czech Republic in terms of European Union affairs, the Czech healthcare system, and small businesses. EU leaders meeting in Brussels on Tuesday approved a softening of the so-called Stability and Growth Pact, the set of guidelines meant to keep EU member states' budget deficits under control and reduce inflationary pressures. Under the revised Stability Pact, countries will be able to deduct the cost of a pension reform from their fiscal deficits, for example. According to a new study released on Wednesday by Bank Austria Kreditanstalt, the softening of conditions make it more likely that Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia will join the Eurozone by 2009, followed by the Czech Republic the following year. In related news, the Czech Prime Minister, Stanislav Gross, who attended the Brussels meetings, criticized the EU's decision to delay the liberalization of cross-border services, saying that a completely open labor and services market was a key goal of the Czech Republic. His Deputy Prime Minister for Economic Affairs, Martin Jan, added that populous EU countries like France and Germany, which had pushed for the delay, had little reason to fear so-called social dumping from its smaller neighbors to the east. In other related EU news, the European Commission has launched proceedings against the Czech Republic for restricting the free movement of second-hand cars. The Commission argues that Czech conditions for registering imported used cars are stricter than those for domestic used cars. The International Association of Pharmaceutical Companies also has filed a complaint against the Czech Republic with the European Commission. The head of the association told the CTK news agency that the complaint centers around what he called the untransparent setting of prices on medicines. The current system lacks clear regulations, the pharmaceutical companies say, and prevents the introductions of new and more effective medicines on the Czech market. Meanwhile, the Czech Doctors Association has called on the health minister, Milada Emirova, to force the country's healthcare insurers to pay the money they owe to doctors and hospitals. The state-run General Health Insurance Company, or VZP, now owes public hospitals and hospital pharmacies over $130 million. The Doctors Association says the debts leave medical facilities unable to pay off their own mounting debts to distributors of medicines. The Senate this week, meanwhile, overwhelmingly rejected a bill that would have required cash-based businesses to use cash registers with fiscal memories as of January 1, 2007. Senators voting against the bill said they doubted the measure would achieve its goal of raising more tax revenue, but feared it would prove overly costly to many small businesses. The Cabinet, meanwhile, has approved the transfer of old army bases and other military property worth about $60 million to adjacent municipalities, acting on a request by Czech town halls. The military will transfer a total of 24 facilities to the municipalities, which can sell them or transfer them on to interested parties tax-free.
Brian Kennedy there, keeping us abreast of all the latest business news here in the Czech Republic. This year marks the 25th anniversary of the founding of the legendary underground band Pražský výběr. During the mid-1980s, the band was blacklisted by the communist regime and became a symbol of resistance. Following the Velvet Revolution, frontman Michal Kocáb acted as one of Václav Havel's main advisers and oversaw the withdrawal of Soviet troops. To celebrate this anniversary, Czech television has just released a documentary film which tracks the band's history and makes use of a wide range of archive material. Nikola Brabanek has more.
A tak jsem se prošel po Miami Beach.
Generally, the members of Pražský výběr, or Prague Selection, felt that the film was a good reflection of their history. One of the most fascinating parts of the film was watching Michal Kocáb's development from musician to politician to businessman, and then back to musician again. I asked him if these different roles could be compatible.
Svět politiky mi přijde se světem uměleckým.
The world of politics and the world of art seem quite compatible to me. In both cases, you're working for others. As a musician, you compose for them, and as a politician, you try to improve people's lives. In both cases, you can take advantage of it, but you don't have to if you don't want to. You can stay clean. Havel was a good example, but the world of business isn't compatible with music or politics. It disrupts the system of altruism. I mean, I know in politics people are often not altruistic, but at least that's the original intent.
A few times in the film, band members complained that the communist regime stopped them from performing just when they were reaching their creative peak. Drummer Claudius Crispin recently re-emigrated from Australia to play with the band again.
Well, there is no limit in art. It really depends on the people. They are creating the art, so of course then they were very young and it's a long time ago, but there is so many good things about being older and more experienced in a way.
So can we expect any new material? Because it seems that right now it's at the phase where it's old material, old favorites that are being played.
As far as I know, the Kitapa has got 6 songs ready to rehearse. I got 2. I'm pretty sure the material is there. But the only problem was basically working on this movie. This actually has stopped us from rehearsing.
Lead guitar player Michal Pavlicek is looking forward to composing new music for the band and speaks about his approach to the contemporary music scene.
For me, the main problem on which I would like to react is the show business like such. There's no any progressivity, there's no any trying to do some experiment in pop or rock, you know. This I don't like, and Prague Selection will be in front of the movement to be not conform.
No, it's not the Czech entry to Eurovision, it's Pražský výběr. That report was by Nikola Brabanek. Moving on, and next, the conclusion to our special Czechs today on the extraordinary lives of Ivo and Jindřiška Siptak. Here's Jan Wellinger.
In part one, you heard about one of the most dramatic escapes from communist Czechoslovakia ever.
The propellers were busted, the undercarriage was busted, but we got out of the plane with no injuries. The reaction in Czechoslovakia was pretty awful. They were really furious.
Now, follow the Siptak family to Canada, where Ivo met his wife, also of Czech descent, although her family's experience was quite different from his own. How did they meet and how did they retain their strong Czech roots? Find out from Ivo and Jindřiška themselves in part two of this Czechs Today. A regular Monday evening in Toronto inevitably means a gathering of Czechs and Slovaks at the Siptaks, friends and acquaintances drinking beer and talking after a Sokol volleyball game. On the table, Polish sausages and Czech beer, with Ivo Siptak attending to his guests until he's satisfied everyone has exactly what he or she wants. Soon, I take the opportunity to ask Ivo more about his family, how they gained new bearings in England, and how they heard only long afterwards their abandoned Prague apartment was sacked.
We heard from our friends after that the communists came into the apartment and smashed everything that was in that apartment, including my mother had a collection of Dresden and Sèvres figurines. They didn't even bother to keep it. They smashed it.
The old life behind them, the Siptaks stayed in Britain for almost 10 years. But although his family liked London, it wasn't their destiny to stay.
We lived in suitcases for several years until 1956, Hungarian Revolution happened. They were free for a whole week or even more, and nobody helped them. We were set to go. There was a whole army of people that wanted to help. At that time, the Americans put out a directive that nobody should help the Hungarians. So at that time, we decided, well, we're not going back. England, actually, the weather, and my dad got very sick there, so we decided to emigrate to Canada.
Eventually, the Siptaks settled in Toronto, finding new purpose in organizations in the city like the Masaryk Memorial Institute, which echoed the moral values and resolve of Czechoslovakia's First Republic. The older Sokol Gymnastics chapter also provided an important cultural framework, sports and a sense of community around which they could build their lives. Ivo's father had been an important Sokol figure in Prague, and he continued in that role in Canada. Those are some of the reasons Ivo believes his family never lost touch with its Czech roots.
I don't think they really faded, because we were political refugees. It's different if you come over, you know, looking for a good living. We kept our ties to Czechoslovakia. We always wanted to go back, especially my dad and mother, of course. So we lived in a Czech community over here. I assimilated into the Canadian way of life. I don't think my parents ever did.
If that was Ivo's family's experience, that of his wife, Jindřiška, was different. Her family had come to Canada earlier. In fact, she was born in Manitoba. She explains her family, while proud of its Czech traditions, became strongly Canadian, too.
My parents came in 1939, and apparently it was the last boat leaving Europe before the war. And it went to Montreal. From there, they ended up about 300 miles north of Winnipeg. And we settled in Minnetonas. And they established a community along with two other European communities. One was Ukrainian and the other was German. Of course, I grew up in the Czech community. And in those days, in order for them to come to Canada, they needed to sign a document that stated that they would work the land for 5 years. So everybody that came out of Europe, my grandparents and three other uncles and my father and their wives, went to the land.
One of Jindřiška's earliest memories, in fact, is of her family at work.
My grandfather and my father, I see an image flash before me. I was maybe 3, 4 years old, of them pulling stumps out of the ground from acreage that they had cut down. And I believe they cleared 100 acres of bushland. And this was all part of the breadbasket of Canada, the prairies. So it's a proud heritage, actually, being the pioneers of Canada and still having the Czech heritage.
After 5 years, though, their obligation was up, and it was time to move to a more convenient setting, the big city.
They decided that it was too bitterly cold up there with the bears and the wolves to stay, and they had scouted other areas of the country in which they could live. My uncle was a businessman, and he came to Toronto. One day he said, okay, it's better conditions down here, and they decided to come to the Toronto area.
Both the Siptaks and Jindřiška's family were involved in Czech organizations like Sokol, but also the church. And it was there that Ivo and Jindřiška met and married soon afterwards. She had studied at an arts college, but put her career on hold to raise a family.
After graduation, that same summer, we married. And actually, I became expecting twins within the first year. In 6 years, I had 5 children. And so it was a full-time occupation. And so I didn't go to work and to earn money. However, I considered myself fully employed at home.
Today, their marriage has lasted many years. The last of their children was born in 1969. Ivo built a good life for his family, working first as a toolmaker, a die and cast man, then running his own business, and finally working in managerial positions, while Jintishka opened a daycare center. Throughout it all, they never forgot their Czech. They both still speak very well. Also, for years they kept an eye on issues in Czechoslovakia, always hoping the communist regime there might one day collapse.
We had an inkling of it when Reagan became president. We had an inkling that he's going to do something to really destroy the Russian Empire. I didn't think it would happen that quickly, but we were ecstatic when it happened.
I recall my father-in-law's expression when he was in the hospital, quite ill, and he was told that the walls came tumbling down. He was extremely excited and exhilarated. It's like thoughts of going back home. You know, those were his feelings. Now he's free to go home, and he could never, ever do that before. I was thrilled because now I would have a chance to see my home country, which I've never seen. And so it was like going to a fairyland, you know. It was very, very moving for me. It's the first time I heard the Czech language spoken universally. And it was, it just brought me to tears.
We're just about out of time here on Radio Prague. So from me, Peter Smith, until next time, goodbye.
Thank you.